You're listening to the latest preaching from Brixham Community Church.
So put your hand up if autumn is your favourite time of year. Yes, yes. And, you know, wouldn't you love a season that you could break out a jumper like this one? I mean, it's beautiful, isn't it? What about winter? Is winter anybody's favourite season? And you'd be like, oh, nobody. Oh, I thought we'd get a few. What about spring? Springtime? Yes. And summer? Yes, yes. So my favourite season is Australian summer. I haven't quite learned to love the English summer so much, but it is lovely over here that you actually get four seasons. I've come to love that myself. And I don't know whether I've been particularly tuned into this word season, but certainly for me over the past few months, it's a word that I've heard a lot. People talking about not just the weather, because I know you love to talk about the weather over here, but in terms of, I've just come out of a really difficult season, or maybe that was just for a season, or I'm going into a really exciting season. We've even heard it spoken about today in different ways. So I've titled my talk this morning. I'm going to need the clicker. Thank you very much. Well, actually, just an aside, this is the season that me and Joe are in with a 20-month and a 4-month-old. And for those who are listening on the tape, it says, I want to go back to that time before I had a kid and I said I was tired and then I'd slap myself. That's the season that we're in at the moment. We have two beautiful, lovely boys, but that's our season. But so I've called this message this morning, Tis the Season, and not to be followed on by Tis the Season to be Jolly, which obviously is quite seasonal at the moment, going into Christmas. I'm going to give you a spoiler alert. I'm actually going to tell you what I'm going to be talking about, because I think then if you're not off, it's okay, you know what I've talked about. So it is the season to keep healthy and to expect beauty. And this is not a prosperity message. I'm not going to give you some secret formula to get fit and to look beautiful. Should be in there. Tis the season to keep spiritually healthy. But I want to talk about today why it is always a season to keep spiritually healthy and why I think we can expect that in any season we're in, it will ultimately result in something beautiful. So we can expect beauty. And I think if I were to ask you to think of a passage about seasons, this is the one that would come to mind, right? Ecclesiastes 3. Or else you would start singing the song, which I'm not going to sing, but the one that was made this famous. So we're going to read that now, and it's Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verses 1 to 11. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to break down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labours? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Now, this is a really poetic, reflective, beautiful passage. I think we can all agree when we read it. And you can see that it speaks to us of the changing nature of our life here on earth. And I say our life here on earth because you'll notice in verse 1, the writer describes that all of these seasons take place under heaven. So we are talking about our life here on earth. Probably most of us could find ourselves in that passage somewhere. We're not going to delve specifically into each of the couplets this morning, as you might call them, but I would actually recommend you go and have a look and do some research for yourself, because I found it really interesting to see some of the biblical examples that each of these couplets can represent. But we're going to not look at that micro level today. We're just going to take the tone of what it's expressing. So we move through life, we enjoy the highs, but we inevitably know that there will be some lows. So as a parent, you give birth to your child, you marvel at the wonder of them as they grow. And then in a few short years, they're off to university or they're getting married, it seems. And even marriage itself has a season. I've only been married for 6 years, but we're at a different place than we were when we started. Namely, Joe has facial hair, so that has, you know, happened over the 6 years. And Dave and Sarah, incidentally, 23 years today, is it? Yeah. Congratulations. There's the transition from parenthood to grandparenthood, or the transition from work to retirement, or perhaps you're reevaluating where you live and you move on in that way. And I think for all of us, it will be at some point looking back on a really precious relationship and mourning that that person isn't here anymore. So you can see, it, to me anyway, it captures the bittersweet nature of life, that there's lovely, lovely, beautiful moments, and then there's moments that really catch us. Now, this passage and the book of Ecclesiastes is generally attributed to Solomon. And I think it's interesting to ponder, what season might he have been walking through when this was written? Now, we probably can't know that for certain, but I found it interesting when I was looking that there was some suggestion that Solomon wrote Song of Songs as a young man, Proverbs in his middle years, and Ecclesiastes as an older man. And whether that's actually how it was or not, I think you can imagine it, and perhaps you've all had somebody older than you say, well, back in my day, or, you know, when I went through this, I've seen many things. We've all had somebody older and wiser say that, and I think that kind of, you can get that inkling through this passage. But to understand even further about the writer's season of life, you really have to look at Ecclesiastes as a whole book. And I found this really great because it made me sit down and read the wonderful book of Ecclesiastes. And maybe wonderful and Ecclesiastes aren't ones words you'd hear together, because it is a tough book. It's really honest. And if we assume that Solomon is the writer, then the same man who asked God for wisdom above all else is the wisest man of his time, perhaps, and perhaps ever, is the same man who in the first few verses of Ecclesiastes says that life's meaningless. How does he get to that place? How does the wisest man get to say that? Well, if you go back to when his father David was still alive and we look at 1 Chronicles, we see that David gives Solomon some advice about what he needs to do in his life, no matter what he's going through. So he says this, "And you, my son Solomon, acknowledge the God of your father and serve him with wholehearted devotion and a willing mind. For the Lord searches every heart and understands every desire and every thought. If you seek him, he will be found by you. But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever." Now, I find this interesting because we know that David, Solomon's father, made some pretty big mistakes in his life, two of which were actually directly related to Solomon's mother. So he committed adultery with her, and then he murdered her husband, or had him killed. So he wasn't perfect. But overall, we see that during David's life, during the hard seasons and the more lovely ones, he kept talking to God. And even when he went away from him, he came back to him. And yet we know from 1 Kings that Solomon, the wisest of the wise, went away from worshipping God alone in his later years. So it says in 1 Kings 11, "For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David." So we know that this happened to Solomon. It didn't happen to David. And we find out through Ecclesiastes that as a result, he's unsatisfied and he's questioning life altogether. And when we get to chapter 3, one commentator describes it as though Solomon suddenly stumbles upon this box of old pictures. And he becomes all nostalgic and he recounts events in his life and their changing nature. It moves so fast and yet it moves so slow. And you may have heard the saying, the days are long, but the years are short. And as a new mum, I think you get told that quite a lot, because sometimes it's hard to get through the days, but people tell you that. And that's the tone of this. You know, I remember when I was a teenager, I used to write letters to my grown-up self about things that were going on in my life. And the tone of that was, well, I'm sure this all seems really childish to you now that you're mature and grown up and you have all your life figured out. And I think to myself now, I'd be a real disappointment to my younger self. Not because of where I am or what I'm doing, but I'm still not that grown up and mature and figured out and complete person that I thought I would be. But I guess that brings me to my first point. No matter what season you're in, it is the season to keep healthy. We're always walking in a season. There's no off season in life, if you like, because we're living, aren't we? And one translation of this passage says that there's a season for every activity. So as long as we're active, we're functioning within a season. I grew up on a citrus orchard. We had two types of oranges, Navel and Valencia, and we had mandarins. And there was only a set period of time where the fruit was ripe and the picking happened. But all throughout the year, something was happening in the life cycle of that fruit, as long as we were keeping the tree healthy. So as long as we were pruning it, watering it, made sure it was in good sun, and it was protected from the pests, then naturally it would do what it needed to do. It self-pollinated, it would grow flowers, it would then drop the flowers and some smaller fruit so that it could actually just sustain the fruit that was eventually going to ripen. But something was happening in the life cycle, even if it wasn't picking time. Now, the tree itself had no control over the seasons. It had to go through them. During winter, it got rained on. And then during the harsh Australian summer, the sun fairly beat down on it, and we get easterly winds where we are in summer, and so the trees would just get absolutely battered about, and you could think it wouldn't bear fruit at all through what it had to go through. But as long as it was remaining healthy, it could do what it naturally needed to do. So wherever we find ourselves in life, whatever season we're in, what we're going through will be the part of the life cycle of our fruit, what we'll eventually produce. And if we continue to do the things that keep us spiritually healthy, even in the difficult seasons, then we will produce fruit when the harvest season comes. When you look at David, he went through dark times. He had lots of ups and downs. We see it in the psalm. But his dark seasons, he always spoke to God about it. He was honest. He expressed his frustrations and we see his sorrow. But he kept talking to God. He kept seeking him. He kept worshipping him, and he kept himself, what you might say, spiritually healthy. If you contrast that with Solomon, he was a wise guy. I mean, he asked for wisdom over everything else, and God gave him everything else besides. Wealth, good standing, peace in his time. He built the temple. But compared to David, it seems like actually things were pretty rosy for Solomon. We don't know what seasons he went through. Just because they're not documented doesn't mean he didn't have hard times. But I wonder if it illustrates to us that in tough seasons and in good ones, it's the importance of staying spiritually healthy. Maybe he got too comfortable with life being good. I mean, he knew that he shouldn't go and intermarry. His father told him, son, whatever happens, whatever you do, acknowledge God, serve him willingly and wholeheartedly. But he didn't do what he needed to do to keep healthy. So I guess it means for us, in both good seasons and in tough seasons, we need to do what we need to do to keep spiritually healthy. And I'm not sorry to say, it's the same things that we've talked about. Daily prayer, seeking God, reading the Bible, using our spiritual prayer language. These are the things that John's unpacked for us with his Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Sunday School. And Paul talked about it last week when he talked about nurturing the seed within us. I want to add in remaining in relationship with other believers. Because Solomon's undoing, if you like, was that he intermarried. He intermarried with women who worshipped other gods. He knew it wasn't wise, but he still did it. And John asked us last week, who are we sitting with? Who are we talking with? Who are we surrounding ourselves with? Just be mindful, I think especially in tough seasons, that you don't cut yourself off from other believers. And I don't just mean in a church sense. I mean going for coffee with somebody, being honest with somebody about what's going on in your life, praying with them, talking it through. Because I know it's hard on a Sunday morning. You get 2 minutes with somebody and you feel like you have to say, yeah, it's great, had a great week. Okay, on to the next person. You know, so don't cut yourself off. Romans 12 talks about us all belonging to one body. And in the same chapter, it calls us to rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. So if you're in a season where there's more weeping or more mourning than laughing and dancing, get alongside somebody and have them talk through with you how it's going and just let them be with you and be a sounding board, you know? And maybe if you're in a season where actually everything's rosy and it's lovely and there is lots of laughing and dancing, have your eyes peeled for people who aren't there and make sure that you can come alongside them. We've just sung a song earlier that says, whatever season I'm going through, I'm going to declare and bless your name, God. When the darkness closes in, when I'm found in the desert place, or when life's all as it should be, I'm going to bless your name, God. So we sing it, but it's so hard to do sometimes, isn't it? It is. But we need to keep doing those things. So if we stick to the idea that Solomon's looking through this box of photos, let's look at why now, whatever season we're in, I think that we can expect beauty. So Solomon, he goes through this process of being all nostalgic, and then all of a sudden, it's like he shakes that off and goes, okay, they were beautiful, there was lovely times, and there was hard times. But what does it all add up to? What does the labor gain? What does the worker gain from what he labors? And we get to the verse that says, God has made everything beautiful in its time. Now, I feel like sometimes when you're going through a dark time or a difficult season, verse 11 is kind of one of those verses that people say to you as some sort of encouragement. And it probably has given lots of encouragement. Perhaps it's even given encouragement to you. But I want to suggest two things about this verse, that God makes everything beautiful in its time. In the King James Version of this verse, it actually says, he hath made everything beautiful in his time. And perhaps it doesn't matter whether it's his time or its time, because actually we know he's the creator and holder of all time and all timings. But for me, I really like the verse that says his time, because it reminds me to focus on him and not the thing that I'm going through, because that might not be beautiful. But if I focus on him and his timing, we've just sung it. He's always beautiful, isn't he? So the first suggestion is, if the season that we find ourselves in isn't beautiful, then perhaps it's not his time yet. Have you ever heard the saying, I think Bob told me this one, or he'd said it in one of his preachers, God is doing more behind your back than he is in front of your face. You heard that one? Yep. And at the end of this verse, it actually says, no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. Maybe that's true of the season that you're in. Maybe it's not beautiful, but when you finally get to the end of the season, you'll see a beauty that you didn't think was possible. And there's a song called Everything is Beautiful in Its Own Way, but I don't actually think that that's true, because to me, terminal illness isn't beautiful. Abuse in any kind of way, physical, emotional, sexual, isn't beautiful. Divorce isn't beautiful. But God can take even the bad things and turn them around. In Isaiah 61, it says, God can give beauty for ashes. He can give the oil of joy for mourning. And he can give the garment of praise for the spirit of heaviness. But there has to be an exchange there. I think that's where we can expect to see beauty in tough seasons, but why it's linked to being spiritually healthy. Because when we seek him and offer him our ashes or our mourning or our spirit of heaviness, I believe he can in time exchange those for something beautiful. I mean, isn't that possible? Has anybody here been through that? A really tough season, and then you get to the end of it and you go, ah, I can see some beauty in it now. It's happened to me. We had Jackie Stockman get up a couple of weeks ago and talk about her really tough season with her family, and yet she's starting to see something from it that's beautiful. So that's the first thing I want to suggest. If the season that you find yourselves in isn't beautiful, then perhaps it's not his time yet. The second thing is this, and this is just me thinking in my own brain. I wonder if the reason that in the past this verse hasn't been encouraging to me personally is because beauty in my eyes is so different sometimes to what God thinks is beautiful. Beauty in the world's eyes is really fickle. It varies from person to person. It's not lasting. And I think sometimes, yeah, our worldview of beauty does match up with God. So there's no denying you can look at a rainbow. God thought that was beautiful. I think that's beautiful. when a baby's born, when my sons were born, it was one of the most beautiful moments of my life. That's beautiful. In a Christian sense, when somebody gives their life to Jesus or gets baptized, that's beautiful. We can see that. God sees that. But I think there's also times when God's idea of beauty is very different from ours. I think the most obvious way that we think of beauty is what it looks like, what something looks like. And the Hebrew word for beautiful, which is used in this verse, is yafeh. And it's used many times in the Old Testament in this way. So it describes Abram's wife, Sarai, and how beautiful she was. It describes Jacob's wife, Rachel. It describes Joseph just before he's seen by Potiphar's wife. So it is used in that sense. When you look at the word beautiful in the New Testament, though, which incidentally is two different Greek words I found out, horaios and kalos, but we're not going to go into that now, but it was interesting. It's really, in Luke 21, you see the disciples commenting about how beautiful the temple is with its beautiful stones and gifts to God. And you see Jesus saying to them that every single thing that they're admiring as beautiful is going to be torn down. Then in Matthew 23, you see Jesus telling the Pharisees that they're like beautiful tombs. They're lovely on the outside, but dead and dirty on the inside. And then in Matthew 26, there's an account of a woman pouring a jar of really expensive perfume on Jesus' head. And the disciples call this wasteful. They say, actually, we could have sold that and given the money to the poor, which is admirable. It's a good idea. We're called to do that. But Jesus says, no, actually, you know what? She's done a beautiful thing here. So there's a mismatch, I think, sometimes in what we think beautiful is and what God thinks beautiful is. I suppose there's other examples. Perhaps you could say when Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan, which at the time would have been unthinkable to the Jews hearing it, but Jesus holds it up as an example of a beautiful response to somebody, and not just somebody, but your enemy. And actually, we can say that the most beautiful thing, I can say the most beautiful thing ever, is what Jesus did on the cross. We sang it again this morning. I see you there hanging on a tree. That's not beautiful when you look at it, is it? But we know that it was beautiful because of the revelation that we had. I'm sure for his followers at the time, it was not a beautiful thing to see. So getting back to God making everything beautiful in his time, maybe it's possible that when we go through things that don't seem beautiful, perhaps there is something about it that's beautiful to God. Perhaps it's creating in us a dependency on him that was waning. Or maybe it's cultivating patience in us, which is a fruit of the Spirit. Perhaps it means we're having to go out of our way to serve somebody. Or maybe we're having to forgive somebody or becoming more humble. Maybe those are the things, just a few thoughts of mine to chew over. Maybe those are the things that are beautiful about what you're going through. But please don't mistake what I'm saying. I'm really not trying to undermine the difficulty of seasons that some people have to walk through. And as I've said, sometimes there are just some things that aren't beautiful. And I'm not undermining the power of God for the miraculous either, because I know that he can change situations just like that. He can, can't he? We can see that. We want to see that happening. We've been talking about it all year. We want to see people healed. We want to see miracles happen. But I think in all of these possibilities about how God might make something beautiful, I think it's reasonable to expect that the season is a season to expect beauty. Because again, going back to the orange tree, an orange tree with no flowers on it, with no fruit on it, doesn't look very beautiful. But we know that something is happening in it to make that beauty happen in the right season. You know, at the end of Ecclesiastes in chapter 12, Solomon kind of gets to the end of it's the end of the book, and he says this: let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. Or in the version I have here, it says, now all has been heard, here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the duty of all mankind. It's like he's gone through all of this. He's talked about all the things he's done in his life, how worthless they were, how meaningless life is. And he concludes by saying, remaining close to God and doing what he says is really what you need to do with your life. It's a bit like, really? You're that wise and that's where you're getting to? I feel like actually for a man who's so wise, it's a bit like a, yeah, you think so kind of a moment. But maybe we can all identify it. Maybe we too make life really complicated. We look back and we look forward and we try and find reasons for things. You know what? I really have no idea what my life will be like when I get older. I don't. I hope I get to walk through really beautiful seasons, and I'm sure I will because God is good and he blesses me. But I feel like I have less idea about my life under the heavens than I do about what I can be hopeful for after. It says, like we said in verse 11 of this chapter, no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. It's like we have this idea of the beginning of things. I know where I was born. I know how it happened, you know, and where it happened and all of that. We know how the earth was formed. We have an account in Genesis. And we know when we love Jesus, when we believe what he did, when we live for him, how we're going to spend our eternity in heaven. But all the middle bits, you know, we can't know what all the things that God's at work in. So what's the best thing we can do in any season, or what's our duty, as Solomon calls it? Maybe it felt to him like a duty at the time. To continue to worship God, to continue to do what he says, because we have the wonderful revelation of Jesus and knowing what he's done for us. And ultimately, through him, God will and God has made everything beautiful. Because we're not just living for the beauty under the heavens, we're living for a beautiful eternity that's made possible through Jesus. And I do hope, if you're going through a tough season now, that that brings you some encouragement, that actually you will see beauty, whether it's a God-given change to your circumstances like that, which I hope it is, whether it's beauty in a different sense, something that's beautiful to God but maybe doesn't seem so beautiful to you at the moment, or, like we all have hope for, the beauty of eternity with Jesus.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit brixham.church.